You are now listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart.
We're here.
Hello there.
It's funny. I just thought of another one of those in our previous episode where we spoke about, you know, song lyrics that lead you to say something like the better to be safe than sorry, take on me.
Yes.
From back in episode whatever.
Yeah.
Just before we started, I said, all right, Detroit, because, you know, it's all right, ready to start.
Yeah.
And there's a Kiss video that was recorded live in Detroit. And at the start, the guy gets on the mic and he's like, all right, Detroit. You know, you wanted the best, you got the best.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it's probably a live album. It might be a live, they actually say that. But they say at most of the gigs, it starts with, all right, whoever, Adelaide, whatever. But because I watch that video so much, whenever I say, all right, as in, let's get going, it's all right, Detroit.
All right, Detroit.
I just can't not do it.
Sort of be different if it was, all right, Saskatchewan.
Well, the funny thing is, if you've got no idea what we're talking about, you're going to have to go back through all 18 episodes.
Oh, I should have said this is episode 19 now.
I shouldn't have said it was a long way back. I should have said I was in one of the previous episodes. You're going to go and find
out. Yeah, people like binge watching.
Yes.
Binge listening. In this case, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like it.
So go back in search of that little nugget.
And if you do find it, let us know. That you found it.
And if you haven't listened to last week's episode, we posed a couple of questions. Go and listen to that. Comment on social media. And a couple of episodes before that, we had a Q&A. So please go and ask us any questions you have of us or, you know, just... It doesn't even have to be serious. If there's shit you'd like us to talk about, and we're really good at talking shit...
We are. It could be completely random. Yeah. Yep.
Well, I think what was one of the last questions is, what do you like to sing in the shower?
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be music related.
No, it doesn't.
You know, I don't know. It could be anything. Go your hardest.
What is your favourite element in the periodical table of elements? Oh, I don't know. I like the noble gases because they're inert. And they make your voice funny when you suck on them. That didn't turn out right, did it? But anyway, that could be taken out of
context. I was actually thinking the same thing because I saw
helium makes you go like this, and xenon makes you go like this.
Well, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking of helium as well because we were talking about that the other day. Because it's used in so many important things. And they're like, imagine having to explain to your grandchildren when there's no helium left and we can't. You know,
well, we are running out of helium, apparently.
I know, and it's when it's gone. We put it in balloons, and then
That's right. And so, it's not like you can just create it.
No, exactly. I think it's like it was something like some sort of scanners or something like that, or some sort of thing where it's just like, you know, I don't know. I can't remember what it was, but it was some sort of medical application where it's just like. Sorry, kids. It made great squeaky voice, but you've sold your future on the river.
We can't have that life-saving operation for you now, little Johnny, because because Daddy used it to make his voice high when he was younger. So it's your fault, Daddy.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today? What crap are we going to spew forth?
Well, we were chatting
good
about...
crap, mind you.
Oh, of course. Yeah, bloody of course. Gold. Bloody comedy.
Gold. Comedy. Well, there's another element that could be your favourite.
What's your favourite element? Comedy gold. That's... So there was a... to lead into this topic, there was a tweet a while ago from Casey Neistat, who, for anybody who doesn't know, is a big YouTuber... a movie maker who revolutionised vlogging, I guess, daily vlogging especially, in terms of filming and producing a video every single day of his life for quite a long time, actually. And then now is probably famous for not making videos anymore because made himself more high profile, I guess, and doesn't need to anymore. Mm. And it's obviously very, you know, taxing to do that. But one of the tweets he mentioned recently, you should go and check him out. He's got some good stuff on YouTube. But he did a tweet and he basically said, back in the day, you used to, you know, Saturday night you used to jump in the car, go into the store, you know, browse the movie section, you know, look at all the boxes and search around and finally find a movie you were looking for and you'd pay your money. And
oh, the video store.
Video store, video store, for those who are going, what's he talking about? Go to a shop and find a movie? Yes, go to Blockbuster or whatever, find your movie, head back home and, you know, get yourself all ready, get your popcorn, I guess, and put your movie in and then watch it in what is not even DVD quality, you know, very low resolution, 480p probably or something like that in terms of because it wasn't digital, but it's just an average quality. And even when DVDs came along, it was 720p. But watch a low-quality movie, and that was your great Saturday night entertainment. And when I saw that tweet, my response as a tweet, and I don't tweet a lot, but my response was to frame it as an answer for a kind of a... what's the game show where you have to give the questions to the answers?
Jeopardy.
So I said... explain the devaluing of art in a single tweet. And, put that underneath his tweet. And I just thought that was it's an interesting kind of topic for discussion, the devaluing of art. And it's not just music, which has obviously been, you know, probably hit the hardest, I think, in terms of those art forms that maybe once made money. Movies probably not as severely, because we still have big cinematic releases. And
yeah, but if you're an independent filmmaker,
it's a lot more difficult.
You are wallowing through a quagmire of bloody Marvel Universe films and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
and it'd be hard for independent filmmakers to get a look in, because it's all franchises and all sequels and everything is just everything is attuned to, you know, they make a movie and they are immediately thinking, well, how is the next movie going to continue on and make money? And they haven't even made money from the movie they've just made.
Yeah.
So where does independent filmmaking get a look in as well?
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm going to segue slightly, because we were talking about this the other day about the big franchises and the fact that also movies are being remade and remade and remade.
Oh, and yes, the pet peeve of mine is, you know, reboots and rehashes and remakes and reimaginings.
We might have to talk about this fully in another video, but I was thinking something really interesting.
Make a note of that, then. That'd be a good topic of discussion. Yeah. But anyway,
I was thinking something really interesting was, I saw Jack Black... it was an interview or something like that, and they said, oh, you went to China to promote Kung Fu Panda. And he goes, I know what you're thinking. It's not my face, because it's animated.
Yeah.
And it's not my voice, because it's overdubbed. Why was I even there?
Yes.
And then I was thinking about it, thinking, that's interesting. When you watch a movie that's overdubbed, and an animated movie, you can probably, the lip syncing isn't probably as bad.
Yeah.
But it's kind of weird. It's kind of like a cover movie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's not the original person or actor doing it. But you are, that actor is probably, is using their character, is reinterpreting the original actor. So the Kung Fu Panda Chinese guy is trying to impersonate Jack Black to a degree.
It wouldn't be a cover band. It'd be a tribute band.
Yeah.
So it'd be a tribute movie.
I know. Isn't that weird? I only thought of that and I thought.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
There's something in that.
But the thing is, though, is that it is in another language. So there is a functional purpose.
Oh, of course.
If Kung Fu Panda was shown in England and Jack Black was replaced by a Cockney dude, it's like, yeah, then that would just be bloody stupid, you know.
Yes.
And that would be, you know, a Cockney sort of the Kung Fu Panda would be in like a, you know, leery sort of maroon suit with sequins on it, you know, throwing darts at a dartboard, drinking lager, you know,
yes,
saying ew all the time. I'm going down to road, down road to pub, you know. Yeah. Anyway, that's beside the point.
I was going to say, in this week's episode, we mentioned the topic and then went and then segued greatly.
Oh, I certainly do want to talk about those golden days of getting your favourite video.
But I mean,
and then, you know, having your popcorn and your Maltesers and your family sized pizza between, you know, three other people and just watching a movie. Yeah. And there's always one person in the crowd that when you go to the video store and you say, "What about that?" and they always say, "Yeah, I've seen that." There's one person that's seen every fucking film, even the bloody, even the, you know, the foreign section where it's like, "Oh, well, surely you've not seen this French film," you know. It's like, "Yeah, seen that." It's like, "Oh, fuck off," you know. But you left kids, with those were the days.
You left with the bad horror flicks or the pornos or something. You left.
And why would that be a problem? Especially the bad horror flicks. I mean,
going and finding a DVD with a group of people was always
fraught with danger.
Yeah, but then as DVDs faded, you used to get the like multiple movies, you know, discount. So like you could kind of say, well, if you don't like this one, you pick one you like that we kind of also like, so you could get some, you know, some overlap of.
That was when movies, that was when Blockbuster was like, you know, just really going down the tubes, and they just pulled all stops to try and get people to go through the door.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's
we did segue off of that.
But it's true. I mean, like there used to be an appreciation for it, and obviously, you know, people used to go to the cinema. You know, they used to dress nice and things like that. And, you know, it's slowly, you know, become such a easily consumable thing. It's, I mean, everything is on demand. Everything is there. People have no patience, no attention span. And especially, you know, and it's not necessarily their fault, but the younger generation, because they've always had everything on demand. You back in the day, you used to have to go to the library, and you know, at school where you had to research something. It's like you had to go to the library in your lunch break or in your free, and go through all the books, researching, trying to find the thing you were looking for. Yeah.
And now all you got to do is just type it into Google.
Well, you can just can probably just say, "Hey Siri," or "Hey Google, tell me the answer."
Now I just wonder. Read it out. I wonder.
Sorry, answer for what?
You're joking. Oh, what was that? Was that your phone?
I've got a Google...
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, we'll leave that in. I've got
a Google Home Mini thing.
Yeah.
And I don't say that very often, as you can tell.
Say what?
I said, "Hey, Google."
Oh, okay.
Because I said, "Hey, Google." So my phone has "Hey, Siri," but I have it switched off intentionally because if I said "Hey, Siri" and I had it on turned on in this room, there'd be three... devices that
we have. So if I say, "Hey Google,"
I just unplugged it.
Oh, did you? Oh, damn.
I unplugged it because it and it's how loud it was.
"Hey Google, theme music for Debbie Does Dallas." Anyway, so what I was going to interject with rather rudely was
just like Google did.
That was classic. We're going to leave that in. Is there always seems to be sort of a lot of bashing of millennials because, you know, and we living in this world where there's just everything is on demand, as you say, and no attention span and this and that and the other. Now, I wonder if the hate that's coming down from above, from the generations above the present youth of today, is it justified, or are we... and the general we that are dumping the hate, are we just jealous because it's what we wanted back then but we never got because technology wasn't around to make that happen?
Everybody, every generation without fail, you either start sounding like your parents or you say things were better in my day.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, and so, I but I think the, I think there's an argument for both sides.
Mm.
I think things were, I mean, for kids now versus, well, they're all locked in their houses, so it probably was better in our day. But it is, isn't that funny, actually? Kids would never go outside. Now they're stuck inside. All they want to do is go outside. Now, yeah. Happy playing on their PlayStations until a year ago. But, you know, in our day, you know, there wasn't computers were only just starting to become a thing.
Yeah.
You know, with Commodore 64s and this kind of stuff, and it was the early days of computers and, you know, original kind of Apple computers and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, look, I don't know that it's necessarily jealousy. I think that there's a lot of the world has become in the whole you can get everything now, and it's not just millennials, it's everybody.
Sure.
It's starting to get impatient and I want my stuff now, and then that becomes it's all about me. It's about me.
Yeah.
And I think we may have spoken about it in another podcast is, you know, I mean that music, we were talking about music that we used to sit around and listen to a record. We used to do it together. And now everything is individual. You've got your earbuds in. And like I do it, I'll sit and listen to, you know, you have stuff on while you're doing things. You'll, you know, listen to a podcast or, you know, you'll be doing the dishes and you'll just chuck something on the, sure. on the iPad and you'll do the dishes and watch something just to, you know, just to multitask. But because of that demanding nature of everything, everybody's a little bit more kind of pushy. And I think that when young kids are also pushy, you know, we had to learn the patience because the movie wasn't on TV right now.
That's right.
You know, like we had even you know, our generation ago. So we had to wait for a show to be on TV.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh, I want to watch that movie. Oh, it's on Saturday night. Okay, here comes 8:30. And we've spoken about the fact that, you know, you used to play a gig and if you kept people past 8:30, you knew you had them for the night, whereas now they can go off any time and start watching Netflix. And then kids later on had VHS, so they could watch movies whenever they wanted, but they had to rewind the tape. So they still had to have some patience because it wasn't instantaneous.
Yeah.
And then if they wanted to swap to a different movie, they had to eject it, and out comes the tape or DVD. Then it still had to come out of the machine. You had to put the other one in, put it away in its box. Now it's just like flick, 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 that one. Mm. You know, everything, bang, bang, bang. I want it now.
Yeah.
You're out at a pub. Kids, we're at a pub now. You have to sit here and eat your meal, talk to your friends on the iPad. So everybody's wanting, you know, the tiny little kids are being taught you can have whatever you want right now. You never have to wait. So it's like, no.
Mm.
The best thing you can do is teach them that when instead of, you know, handing parenting over, geez, that parenting, and I'm a parent of two, well, now adults, but, you know, handing that responsibility over to just an iPad, that'll solve the problem. You know, you have to still be able to go only on occasion and explain to your kid, no. The answer is no.
Yeah.
You're not getting it, and you got to be really careful when they're small. I think to hand that responsibility over because you're effectively teaching that they can get whatever they want whenever they want it,
mm-hmm.
and all they have to do is demand enough. It's like, you know, dog scratching at the door or whatever. If it learns to scratch at the door and then you're going to let it out, then what's it going to do? It's going to scratch at the door.
Yeah.
Whereas if you say no, don't scratch at the door and make it wait, and then teach it that it has to not do that. And just create a delay before the, you know, I think we're just impatient and we want everything. And once you've got the first thing, you want the next thing. And that's where that impatience comes in. And that's where the devaluing comes in. You know, is Casey Neistat had to create a movie every single day.
Mm.
And people got the shits up. If he missed, he didn't for a long time miss a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then he stopped. And it's just like, people were just like, the sky is falling, like the world's coming to an end.
Yeah.
You didn't vlog today.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's his life.
Yeah.
He was giving you a window into it, and now he's decided to stop doing it. Like, yeah. Move on to something else.
Well, that's right. Yeah. It's funny, though, isn't it, that you let people into your life through daily vlogs, and then people inherently feel entitled to own you through doing that. And it's a really bizarre thing to experience, I would imagine, is that all of a sudden, you know, if you decide to take a day off, then you have a group of people that will be jumping up and down saying, how dare you, why did you miss a day? And I hope Casey just turned around to him and just told him, well, fuck off.
Well,
you know, but because that's what should happen. You know, it's like, get fucked. You know, it's like, go live your life. You know,
I think that, yeah, I mean,
but I suppose is
you build a relationship with the person as a weird kind of, it's not a friendship, but it's an understanding of their life,
yeah.
And that the funny thing is that you're actually, as an audience member.
Hmm.
In a way, you're there for them. You want your audience to be there. So as a musician, we want our audience to be there. When we release something new or play a gig, we want the audience to turn up. And you create this expectation. And when you don't turn up, I mean, if people cancel music concerts, the audience gets the shits up, do you know what I mean? Because there was an expectation that we're going to be there. And when you build up an expectation of doing daily vlogs, it's just like, hang on, he normally uploads it. I mean, it would be... you know, a certain time,
mm-hmm.
and if it's not there, it's like, you know, as an audience member, a lot of people have turned up for that expecting it to be there, and so they've done their part of the bargain. So I kind of get it to a degree, and some people go to go, that's pathetic, and they kind of go, well, it's...
Is it really that part of the bargain? It's like, it's like if someone is completely rearranging their life so they can be free as soon as a video or a podcast gets dropped, I mean, I think they just need to get it live.
Oh, I'm not necessarily saying,
you know, that. it's not like Snapchat where it's up for a certain amount of time and then it disappears. No. It's like, you know, once it's on YouTube or once the podcast is released or whatever, it's there forever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that.
No one's got a gun pointing to their head saying that you must completely rearrange your life to ensure that as soon as it drops, you're there to receive it.
No, but I mean, as a it's like this podcast, for example.
Mm.
We drop it on a Friday, and it would be nice if some people listened to it on a Friday. They thought, hey, Friday, it drops on Friday. I'll listen to it on a Friday. Fantastic.
They do. There's two people that regularly...
yeah.
But, well, there's a couple of people that regularly say, you know... well, there was one in which the, you know, I missed the deadline on one of them.
And, did you get a complaint?
I did. I did. It's, oh... I wasn't a complaint. It was just like, oh, is everything okay?
You got a complaint from me.
Yeah, that's
where's the podcast?
That's right. But no, it was just like, oh, is everything okay? I can't see the podcast. It's like, I wrote back, yep, don't worry, it'll be there. Don't worry about it. But he wasn't jumping up and down,
But you still see that dynamic of that audience having an expectation that. What they're looking forward to arrives, you know, it's nice to have people who are like anticipating. I mean, I do some stuff on, you know, YouTube in the tech space. So I made a video just the other day. I haven't made one in ages. It took a phenomenally long period of time to make, and you know, my tech videos don't get thousands of views or millions of views or anything like that, and they, you know. They do get views over time, and I make them. I want to put out good products, so I don't just chuck out a video and just go, you know, quick shit video. It'll get the same amount of views as one that I spend a lot of time doing. I like to create a good product. But you know, a guy commented almost straight away saying, "Amazing video," and I've been, regardless of the topic, he was just talking about the topic. It was just phones, but won't get into that. But it's nice to have those people there who are waiting for you to deliver the product.
Yeah.
I guess, and even in doing it daily, actually, you know, creates this unrealistic expectation and a huge demand on your time and your family time, and where you've got to sit up all night editing to get it out the next day, and then it's just Groundhog Day every single day.
Yeah.
You know, you're not actually living a life yourself. So there's people out there in the world just going, oh, I can't wait till this daily vlog comes out. And the person doing the daily vlog is stressed to the max, especially if they're the person who edits everything themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, in case he has a certain tone of voice that he uses in terms of the way, but you describe it as a tone of voice, you know, the way he delivers his message in terms of the shots he uses and all those sorts of things. That's the voicing of the video.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't get somebody else to edit it because they couldn't do it the way he does it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the more we get into that sort of world, I guess, where people want stuff on a regular basis, it's like having to post, you know, to social media, Instagram or anything really. Just it's got to be daily, and it's got to be, you know, you've got to keep in front of people's face. And
yeah.
You know, we all know what Instagram looks like. It's, you know, you post something and somebody follows you and hundreds of other people.
Yeah.
And then seconds later, that's gone. You know, because other things have come along and pushed it out of the way.
Yeah, that's right.
And if they're following lots of people, to stay relevant and stay in front of people,
you got to keep on getting in front of their faces all the time.
Yeah, so then it becomes, you know, the stuff that you're putting out, is it actually quality, and does the art actually have, if there's art involved, say it's a, well, I mean, for Instagram, if it was a photograph, I mean, even though it's becoming more of a video app,
yeah,
it's a photograph and you spend all this time editing it and you put it on there and boom, it's gone because somebody scrolled past it. And you know, you put a song on there that you work on.
Yeah.
We kind of are we producing just a whole bunch of rubbish? You know, because the art has been devalued, are we starting to produce more lower quality? You know, are we becoming the McDonald's kind of thing? Do you know what I mean? We're just banging it out as fast as we can, and
yeah,
does it? You know, you're a slave to that social media grind. You've got to post. I say that and don't post just because I just find it inanely, you know, boring.
Mm.
And then it also takes away from your, you know, free time as well.
Oh, it does.
Like, yeah. I mean, you used to not have a phone that meant anything. It was just a, you know, when mobile phones first came out, it's just like it would ring and you get a text occasionally.
Yeah.
So when you're at home, you just chuck it somewhere. You know, you chuck it with your keys near the front door.
Yeah.
It was a phone for when you weren't at home. And then
now it's got everything on it.
A bunch of young people invented texting and the rest is kind of...
Yeah.
But now it's, now you have it in your pocket because you want to reference something. You grab it out and, you know, as we were talking before, you reference.
Yeah.
And so we don't have that downtime where it's just silence. You know, you think about, I was talking about doing the dishes.
Mm.
And once upon a time you were just done the dishes, and while you were doing the dishes you might sing to yourself or think about stuff and let your mind just wander. Whereas now you multitask, you whack some YouTube videos on, or, you know, maybe you're watching a movie or a TV series, you chuck that on.
Yeah.
And you remove all the dead space. You know, we've spoken in music about the silence being just as important.
Yeah.
And it's more important than the stuff you do play, you know. Yeah, and exactly. I say that's why I'm so good, because there's heaps of stuff I can't play. But you know, that dead space is important, not only in a song, and, you know, negative space in a graphic design, for example.
Yeah.
You know, empty space. It you know, like you look at photographs, and it's the empty space that draws attention to the topic. And
well, it gives a point of reference, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we have no empty space in our world at the moment. It's just a constantly bombardment of information. And then people have an insatiable appetite for that information.
Yeah.
So they're like, you release a song and they go, when's the album? You know? Or you release a song and they go, when's the EP coming out? And you release an EP and they go, when's the album coming out?
Yeah.
And it never stops. And I don't know, how do you stop that? And the problem is that art's not, since going online, it's not worth as much, downloads aren't, streaming especially. So how do you kind of, without jumping on the crazy train of the online stuff, this constant throw stuff at it, how do you build an income stream, in terms of, it's a challenge for a lot of artists, I think, of how to potentially do that.
Well, I think we've said it before that it's about building community. And I suppose if you're building a community around you and your music or your art or whatever output creatively you do, there is an element of working for your audience rather than working for you. But talking about the
deal, try to find an audience who aren't too demanding, who are happy.
Yeah.
Try to find an older audience who.
I think it just depends on the type of person that is part of your audience. I'm sure that in the quest for putting out content every day and then missing a day and having some flack for that.
Yeah.
I would still think that the amount of audience that would give Casey flack for not putting a video out on a particular day is not all the people that are watching his videos. It's just a very small percentage. And, it's just part of human nature, I think. You're going to have, some sort of 80-20 rule element of that. It just depends on the person. Some people just feel more entitled than others, and that could be for a whole range of things. But in regards to the devalued nature of art as a whole, I suppose I can see why people would think it's devalued, but has the value of art just changed, or has it been really devalued, or has it just changed? Like, I suppose when before movies came out, before cinemas came out, there was the theatre, and then movies came, and then people didn't really need to go to the theatre, but the attitude towards the theatre, rather than it was the prevailing medium for entertainment, is now something that still exists and you still go, but you choose to go to the theatre rather than you had no choice but to go to the theatre. Back in the so-called good old days when, you and I were developing our craft and all of that sort of stuff, and you hear of musicians talk about a golden age where gigs flowed like wine down rivers of highly paid jobs and all of that sort of stuff. I mean, it's just selective memory, really. It wasn't really like that. But there was a lot more audience around because there was less attention being, or less distractions being thrust upon them, because there weren't many other things to do at that time, except, every pub had a band. There was music in every venue. There was, and people were out and about sort of experiencing all that, because there was no Netflix. There wasn't even video or whatever. Well, so once the technology comes in and disrupts the status quo, the disrupted technology doesn't necessarily become devalued. It just becomes more niche. Just becomes a niche, just like anything else. So is it really devalued, or is it just the attitude towards that particular art form or creative output has changed and needs to have sort of some perspective put on it.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, obviously the other thing is that there's a lot more to choose from now.
Sure.
For a number of reasons. I mean, there's just been a greater length of time. I think we spoke about in one of the podcasts that, you know, the Beatles weren't competing against an awful lot of music when they first came out. Mm. That's not, I'm not
compared
saying,
to what's happening now.
We're not saying the Beatles aren't good, but just in terms of the volume of music, you're competing against. So somebody said, there was a, somebody was talking to a famous musician who was born in the 40s. And they said, why were so many great musicians born in the 40s? And he said, there wasn't a bunch of great musicians born in the 40s. He said, we just weren't competing against anything.
Yeah.
You're competing now against the entire history of modern music.
Yeah.
Which is like 80 years.
Yeah.
Or something like that, you know, or 70 years. Yeah. Back to the 50s probably when it all started to start.
Yeah, I see.
And the thing is that now, with the evolution of computers, is you don't even need to be able to play an instrument now. Like, there's seriously, you don't, if you've got a laptop, you don't need to be able to play any instrument.
Yeah.
You can mess around and construct songs and just own a laptop and a mouse.
Yeah.
And create songs. So the ability to even play an instrument is no longer required. So it's just that the saturation of who can release a song. It's a bit like back in the day, stupid people didn't have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get too political about stupid people, but stupid people didn't have a voice. Smart people had it, you know, had a bit of. I'm not talking like hundreds of years ago. I'm talking about, you know, before the rise of the internet and social media. But you know, nobody was going to listen to a stupid person. They could yell their bizarre opinions in the street as much as they wanted. Nobody was going to listen to them.
Yeah.
But now the internet gives them a place where they can find each other, get on their soapbox and, you know, say all sorts of crazy shit.
Yeah.
With no scientific backing or no factual backing whatsoever. And, you know, on whatever topic you like, you'll find a crazy person railing about it. And so the internet just allows anybody to do anything. So for every Casey Neistat out there, and there's not too many at that kind of level, there's, you know, hundreds of other YouTubers. I mean, you know, I mean, I do tech YouTube, and I've got 3,500 followers, and I could probably grow that significantly more.
Mm-hmm.
And there's heaps of YouTubers I see chatting on Twitter about technology, and I think, oh, I wonder how big this person is. It's like 50 followers, 150 followers. And they go, to get a bit of traction is particularly difficult.
Yeah.
And, but the opportunity to upload stuff, music or other creative works, is so much easier.
Yeah.
I mean, for a, you know, for an independent filmmaker, you know, you have, you know, avenues now that you didn't have before also. I mean, in terms of, you know, you can do Patreon and you can do Kickstarter and stuff like that to fund projects, and
yeah,
and you can, you know, you can do events where it, you know, people can watch, pay a fee and watch a movie online. But you know, it's so there's avenues like that that have opened up in some areas, but yeah, I mean, I think the volume of stuff and the way it's delivered. Yeah, look, I mean, as you say, is it a reset or a devaluing? I think the devaluing is not necessarily financial devaluing,
yeah,
as well as just being, you know, because of the volume of content, it's the less appreciation, you know.
Yeah.
People are kind of like, oh, you're cool, I've watched that. And instead of savouring it, you know, I think we spoke about, people still do, but you go to the cinema and then it's great to sit down with other people and talk about it afterwards. And, you know, I mean, we caught up the other night and watched The Meaning of Life,
yeah,
Monty Python movie, which you hadn't actually seen. You'd seen the other ones, but not that one. And it's great just to watch it and then chat about it afterwards, and then we caught up for dinner tonight and we're chatting about it again.
Yeah.
And there's that deeper appreciation of it, because the saturation of so much content that you just move on to the next thing. What's the next one? And yeah. the next thing. And shuffle on my, you know, on my device. And so I think that, you know, there's probably still an element of people who deeply get involved, but it is a more challenging kind of space, I guess, yeah. to find that audience and find the audience that really value kind of what you're doing.
Yeah, well, finding people that have the same interests as you or me or anybody would be relatively easy if what you do is scour the forums and the groups and the pages on Facebook regarding a particular topic that you're, you know, wanting to get in front of people on. Especially Facebook is really good in terms of the proliferation of groups and pages over certain niche topics. But yeah, it's still all about community, building a community, building a community of like-minded people, and finding ways in which you can get your art or music or whatever your creative endeavor is in front of people that want to see it, read it, hear it, touch it, feel it, experience it.
Yeah.
I still believe that people want an experience. I just think that people's attitude towards creativity and towards different art forms is different to what it was before, because there is so much distraction. And people are fatigued by distraction. And you put your stuff out there, and it would be very easy, I suppose, to have your audience, who are probably jaded and cynical and just tired, you know, of just being bombarded with information 24/7. Trying to get them to, like, give a damn about you and what it is that you do.
Mm.
That's probably the hardest thing. And I don't think people have the attitude of they don't give a shit about you and your art because they don't like you. It's if everyone is just waving a placard saying, "Here I am, come and pay attention to me." If everyone's doing that, then it just gets really hard. Gets really hard to appreciate that. It's like charities. You know, it seems like nowadays, because of everything that's going on with COVID and economies are in varying degrees of disrepair and repair depending on the country and all that sort of stuff, one of the main sectors that are really hardest hit are the not-for-profits.
Yeah.
And they all have their hands out wanting donations. And there is something called like donation fatigue or charity fatigue or something like that.
Yeah.
In which I'm sure that you know, you get a phone call and your phone says it's a possible scam or something like that, and you think to yourself, oh, this is probably another telemarketer wanting to, you know, from say multiple sclerosis or some organization that you've probably given to in the past, and they're wanting to continue that relationship by calling you up and gently reminding you that there's a lottery on and it'd be a good idea for you to buy some tickets in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get to the end of your tether and it's like, well, if I have one more person from a charity ring up, I'm just not going to give to anybody, you know, and people just shut down.
Yeah.
If you give someone too much choice, they won't make any choice whatsoever, you know.
Yeah.
If you're... if you're writing a song and you've got your door up, you know, you've got Logic up and you've got the ability to write, you know, have pretty much unlimited sounds because you might have a big library of presets and big library of bloody plugins and all that sort of stuff, and you can put up, you know, 20, 30, 40 tracks or whatever, you know, you've got everything at your disposal. And what do? You just use the stock plugins and you just go to your go-to, because I'm just too tired to make a decision about anything, you know.
Yeah. You've got a wall of guitars, you end up playing one of them.
You've got a wall of guitars and you end up playing one of them.
Not entirely true. Yeah. But, I mean, I know what you're saying.
And so people are like that with everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think the art is devalued. It's just the people's attitude towards it is different because there's so much of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose it's in a roundabout way, and the long-winded sort of, you know, circular argument is that's probably the what people are calling devaluation of art.
It's interesting, actually, thinking about that, actually, is that you were saying if you've got too much choice, you don't, you know, make a choice. And I made a tech video recently and I've been meaning to make it for a long time. I mean, it was about an iPhone 12 because iPhone 13 is about to come out. That's just what it was. But I had to do it. It had to be done. It was either do it or don't do it. Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, I can do it next week. I can do it next month. And I think that time crunch, you know, you kind of have to do it. And one of the interesting things, people who've seen me live know that I wear Kobe sneakers at most of my gigs. Well, all of my gigs, actually. And, you know, with sneakers like that, they're limited. So when they come out, they're limited. You have to be ready to order straight away. So there's like this tiny little window. And therefore, the demand is really high. People desperately want to be on board.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually an interesting thing with, you know, if you look at, say, people going to a movie at a cinema, there's a short window of opportunity to do that. So you do get lots of people going along. But then there's things that I've wanted to watch on Netflix for like a couple of years, haven't watched them yet, because they're all just sitting there. I'll watch them at some point.
Yeah.
And creating that short demand, it's like seeing a band touring. It's like that's your only opportunity. But you may not be listening to them that much on streaming because it's available. I can listen to it anytime.
Yeah.
And so there's no desperation to kind of get in there and do it now. And I think you can create that a little bit with some of your avenues of promoting music, probably, which is, you know, things like Patreon and stuff like that, where you're creating a limited club, a limited opportunity. Yeah. Come and get it this Friday, or don't get it at all. Yeah, or you've got 7 days to watch this, and then I'm going to delete it.
Yeah, it's that FOMO thing, you know, fear of missing out.
Yeah.
Which is one of the big drivers of sort of marketing nowadays.
Maybe we should just like release an album and say, you can buy it for like 10 days and then it's going to be deleted forever. It's never going to be available again. But then people, unfortunately,
then the ones that buy the downloads can just then just proliferate anyway.
Legally do it, yeah. But I mean,
if there was something in the download that all downloads that get bought,
see, that'd be cool.
Get destroyed. See, that's within 10 days.
There's the future. There's the future. Is that something in a file that after a certain time it deletes. Or if the file gets copied, both the it doesn't copy and it deletes the one they tried to copy.
Right.
But I was going to say one other thing just while I think of it, because otherwise I'll forget, is you were talking about community and stuff like that and finding people who like your audience. And it's interesting, actually, I don't think we spoke about it. I don't think I mentioned it. In the podcast that we had delete, which a couple of weeks ago we had a podcast that didn't record properly, so we had to re-record it. But in that one, I think I spoke about it in the original one, but not the second one, was the fact that, you know, a lot of YouTubers will talk about building a community around what you do, and that you let people into your life a little bit, and they get to know you a little bit, and they get to know a little bit about you, so they feel like they know you.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's something that helps you build that community, is exposing yourself a little bit and saying, hey, this is who I am, and this is the kind of things I like.
Yes.
Because then people can feel a connection with you or not. They can kind of go, you know, for example, like I like, you know, my things are music and mountain biking and I do a bit of tech stuff. And somebody kind of like, oh, I like his music. Oh, cool. I'm actually into mountain biking as well. And it's like, But somebody goes, oh, if maybe I can take him mountain biking when he comes to the UK. You know, like, I know that's a kind of a, you know, very specific example, but something like that where people have an interest in things you've got an interest in. Oh, he might talk about, if he's doing vlogs, he might talk about mountain biking, and I'm interested in that as well. So it's just another reason to like the guy and connect with them and have a, you know, a relationship where you have feel like you have something in common with that person. And I feel like there's an element of that in terms of opening up in that way.
Yep.
Helps build that community. And I think, you know, some people feel kind of uncomfortable about it and think, why would you care, you know, about somebody online and what they're interested in? And it's like, because you can see some of yourself in them. And I mean, I guess it's difficult. It's not difficult. It's different for us being artists ourselves.
Yeah.
So when we follow a musician or a, you know, producer or something like that online, or somebody who's talking music online, there's probably a different level of connection. You know, you see yourself in them on that level, but somebody else might be interested by other aspects of their life as well. You know, like an artist might be, they might be spiritual in some way.
Yes.
Oh, you're into Zen and Buddhism, and you might see an artist and you kind of go, oh, I kind of like his music. And then you might find out that he's into that, and you kind of go, actually, that draws me in even more.
Yeah, you're right.
I only liked his music a little bit, but now suddenly I'm actually more interested in hearing more of what he does. And then I'll see if I find something in there that's even, you know, and I actually feel that the more you connect with somebody, you can go, look, I think that song actually wasn't that good. Mm. And you go, look, I'm just speaking honestly. I didn't like that one, but I really like this one. Whereas some people just be like, oh, I like everything you do. Yes. Everything you do is awesome.
Yeah.
And they'll shout you down for not liking it. It's just like, hey, I'm not saying I don't like the guy. I'm just saying that that song didn't connect with me. And that's cool. And it's just like, and I don't think that's your best work. That's my perspective, my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just going to, and I actually think that's actually more valuable. I would much prefer somebody to come on YouTube and say, hey, this new video, it's a step up from all the other stuff you've been doing. Or, hey, it wasn't quite as good as some of the other stuff. I prefer that than somebody who just goes, oh, I fucking love everything you do.
Well, yeah.
That's a more valuable opinion.
Yeah. And so people, it's a more honest opinion.
People online these days, it's just like, if you don't love everything somebody does, and it's just like, no, you know. And or if you think somebody's got a piss-poor attitude and you call them out, it's just like, look, that's a piss-poor attitude to have about, you know, towards other people about this or that or the other.
Sure.
And it's like, it's very dangerous to call people out or step out of line. But I think that kind of connection is a, you know, a good way of exposing yourself and opening up to people and, you know, letting them know who you are.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a nice way to bookend this. Maybe that actually is a way of adding value back to your art.
Well, it's the direct relationship that you have with your audience that therein is where the value is created. Yes, you're absolutely right.
You know, it's no longer just a song. It's like, hey, this is a song by Soul Trader or Corey or Simon or whoever. It's
someone has a vested, you know, interest in it,
yeah,
because of the direct relationship they have through the content that you create.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, and you know, the more they come into that community, that thing you build.
Hence what I was saying before about, you know, is art really devalued, or has the definition of value in art changed? And I think what we're talking about is that art still has a value. It's just the way that value is perceived is changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's through that sort of, you know, creating an environment in which someone can be touched, moved and inspired by what it is that you do.
Yeah.
And but them feeling that they are the only person that you're doing it for.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
And that's a real challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, if you're listening to this podcast, jump on our social medias, go and comment and give us your opinions on, has art being devalued, or how do you, you know, connect with artists in other ways than just listening to their music, buying merch, or, you know, do you interact with them on social media, or do you follow people on Patreon, and who do you follow, and who do you think we should follow?
Do you stalk them on Facebook and then go and take photos of them, you know, in a treetop overlooking their window? Or do you...
We're going to keep an eye out in the trees in the future.
Yeah, that's right.
Or do you listen to their podcast?
That's, you know, it, yeah.
Once upon a time.
I hope you get lots of value out of what we talk about.
Once upon a time, only important people were given microphones to broadcast to the world. Now any two douchebags like us can put out stuff every single week, just like this.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening to another episode of the Soul Trader podcast. We really appreciate you guys.
Episode 19. Check us out on all of the socials, and as well, Corey Stewart Online and SoulTraderMusic.com, CoreyStewartOnline.com, and yeah, whatever you want to say, just say it. We got thick skin. We don't bite. We probably nibble a little bit, but, you know, just...
Only if you ask nicely.
Only if you ask nicely, yeah. But anyway, it is time to go.
See you next time.
Ciao for now.
You have been listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart. Be sure to check out SoulTraderMusic.com and CoreyStewartOnline.com. See you next week.